where it showed through the trees. All the time I was rowing. The lake widened, and across it on the shore at the foot of the mountains on the other side, we saw a few lights that should be Luino. I saw a wedge-like gap between the mountains on the other shore, and I thought that must be Luino. If it was, we were making good time. I pulled in the oars and lay back on the seat. I was very, very tired of rowing. My arms and shoulders and back ached, and my hands were sore.
"I could hold the umbrella," Catherine said. "We could sail with that with the wind."
"Can you steer?"
"I think so."
"You take this oar and hold it under your arm close to the side of the boat and steer, and I'll hold the umbrella." I went back to the stern and showed her how to hold the oar. I took the big umbrella the porter had given me and sat facing the bow and opened it. It opened with a clap. I held it on both sides, sitting astride the handle hooked over the seat. The wind was full in it, and I felt the boat suck forward as I held hard as I could to the two edges. It pulled hard. The boat was moving fast.
"We're going beautifully," Catherine said.
All I could see was umbrella ribs. The umbrella strained and pulled, and I felt us driving along with it. I braced my feet and held back on it. Then suddenly it buckled. I felt a rib snap on my forehead. I tried to grab the top that was bending with the wind, and the whole thing buckled and went inside out, and I was astride the handle of an inside-out ripped umbrella, where I had been holding a wind-filled, pulling sail. I unhooked the handle from the seat, laid the umbrella in the bow, and went back to Catherine for the oar. She was laughing. She took my hand and kept on laughing.
"What's the matter?"
I took the oar.
"You looked so funny holding that thing."
"I suppose so."
"Don't be cross, darling. It was awfully funny. You looked about 20 feet broad and very affectionate holding the umbrella by the edges," she choked.
"I'll row."
"Take a rest and a drink. It's a grand night, and we've come a long way.
I have to keep the boat out of the trough of the waves."
"I'll get you a drink, then rest a little while, darling."
I held the oars up, and we sailed with them. Catherine was opening the bag. She handed me the brandy bottle. I pulled the cork with my pocket knife and took a long drink. It was smooth and hot, and the heat went all through me, and I felt warmed and cheerful. "It's lovely brandy," I said. The moon was under again, but I could see the shore. There seemed to be another point going out a long way ahead into the lake.
"Are you warm enough, Cat?"
"I'm splendid.
I'm a little stiff."
"Bail out that water and you can put your feet down." Then I rowed and listened to the oarlocks and the dip and scrape of the bailing tin under the stern seat.
"Would you give me the bailer?"
I said. "I want a drink."
"It's awfully dirty."
"That's all right. I'll rinse it." I heard Catherine rinsing it over the side. Then she handed it to me dipped full of water. I was thirsty after the brandy, and the water was icy cold, so cold it made my teeth ache. I looked toward the shore. We were closer to the long point. There were lights in the bay ahead.
"Thanks,"
I said, and handed back the tin pail.
"You're ever so welcome," Catherine said.
"There's much more if you want it."
"Don't you want to eat something?"
"No, I'll be hungry in a little while. We'll save it till then."
"All right." What looked like a point ahead was a long, high headland. I went further out in the lake to pass it. The lake was much narrower now. The moon was out again, and the Guardia di Finanza could have seen our boat black on the water if they had been watching.
"How are you, Cat?" I asked.
"I'm all right. Where are we?"
"I don't think we have more than about 8 miles more."
"That's a long way to row, you poor sweet. Aren't you dead?"
"No, I'm all right. My hands are sore as all."
We went on up the lake. There was a break in the mountains on the right bank, a flattening out with a low shoreline that I thought must be Canobio. I stayed a long way out because it was from now on that we ran the most danger of meeting Guardia. There was a high dome-capped mountain on the other shore away ahead. I was tired. It was no great distance to row, but when you were out of condition, it had been a long way. I knew I had to pass that mountain and go up the lake at least 5 miles further before we would be in Swiss water. The moon was almost down now, but before it went down, the sky clouded over again, and it was very dark. I stayed well out in the lake, rowing a while, then resting and holding the oars so that the wind struck the blades.
"Let me row a while," Catherine said.
"I don't think you ought to."
"Nonsense. It would be good for me. would keep me from being too stiff.
I don't think you should, Cat.
Nonsense. Rowing in moderation is very good for the pregnant lady.
All right, you row a little moderately. I'll go back, then you come up. Hold on to both gunwales when you come up.
I sat in the stern with my coat on and the collar turned up and watched Catherine row. She rowed very well, but the oars were too long and bothered her. I opened the bag and ate a couple of sandwiches and took a drink of the brandy. It made everything much better, and I took another drink.
"Tell me when you're tired," I said.
Then a little later, "Watch out the oar doesn't pop you in the tummy."
"If it did," Catherine said between strokes, "life might be much simpler."
I took another drink of the brandy.
"How are you going?"
"All right."
"Tell me when you want to stop."
"All right."
I took another drink of the brandy, then took hold of the two gunwales of the boat and moved forward.
"No, I'm going beautifully.
Go on back to the stern. I've had a grand rest."
For a while, with the brandy, I rowed easily and steadily. Then I began to catch crabs, and soon I was just chopping along again with a thin brown taste of bile from having rowed too hard after the brandy.
"Give me a drink of water, will you?" I said.
"That's easy," Catherine said.
Before daylight, it started to drizzle. The wind was down, or we were protected by the mountains that bounded the curve the lake had made. When I knew daylight was coming, I settled down and rowed hard. I did not know where we were, and I wanted to get into the Swiss part of the lake. When it was beginning to be daylight, we were quite close to the shore. I could see the rocky shore and the trees.
"What's that?" Catherine said.
I rested on the oars and listened. It was a motorboat chugging out on the lake. I pulled close up to the shore and lay quiet. The chugging came closer. Then we saw the motorboat in the rain a little astern of us. There were four Guardia di Finanza in the stern, their alpini hats pulled down, their cape collars turned up, and their carbines slung along their backs. They all looked sleepy so early in the morning. I could see the yellow on their hats and the yellow marks on their cape collars. The motorboat chugged on and out of sight in the rain. I pulled out into the lake. If we were that close to the border, I did not want to be hailed by a sentry along the road. I stayed out where I could just see the shore and rowed on for 3/4 of an hour in the rain. We heard a motorboat once more, but I kept quiet until the noise of the engine went away across the lake.
"I think we're in Switzerland, Cat," I said.
"Really?"
"There's no way to know until we see Swiss troops.
Or the Swiss Navy.
The Swiss Navy's no joke for us. That last motorboat we heard was probably the Swiss Navy."
"If we're in Switzerland, let's have a big breakfast. They have wonderful rolls and butter and jam in Switzerland."
It was clear daylight now, and a fine rain was falling. The wind was still blowing outside up the lake, and we could see the tops of the white caps going away from us and up the lake. I was sure we were in Switzerland now. There were many houses back in the trees from the shore, and up the shore away was a village with stone houses, some villas on the hills, and a church. I had been looking at the road that skirted the shore for guards, but did not see any. The road came quite close to the lake now, and I saw a soldier coming out of a café on the road. He wore a gray-green uniform and a helmet like the Germans. He had a healthy-looking face and a little toothbrush mustache. He looked at us.
"Wave to him," I said to Catherine.
She waved, and the soldier smiled embarrassedly and gave a wave of his hand. I eased up rowing. We were passing the waterfront of the village.
"We must be well inside the border," I said.
"We want to be sure, darling. We don't want them to turn us back at the frontier."
"The frontier is a long way back. I think this is the customs town. I'm pretty sure it's Brazago."
"Won't there be Italians there? There are always both sides at a customs town."
"Not in wartime. I don't think they let the Italians cross the frontier."
It was a nice-looking little town. There were many fishing boats along the quay, and nets were spread on racks. There was a fine November rain falling, but it looked cheerful and clean even with the rain.
"Should we land and then have breakfast?"
"All right."
I pulled hard on the left oar and came in close, then straightened out when we were close to the quay and brought the boat alongside. I pulled in the oars, took hold of an iron ring, stepped up on the wet stone, and was in Switzerland. I tied the boat and held my hand down to Catherine. Come on up, Cat. It's a grand feeling.
What about the bags?
Leave them in the boat.
Catherine stepped up, and we were in Switzerland together.
What a lovely country, she said.
Isn't it grand?
Let's go and have breakfast.
Isn't it a grand country? I love the way it feels under my shoes.
I'm so stiff I can't feel it very well, but it feels like a splendid country. Darling, do you realize we're here and out of that bloody place?
I do, I really do. I've never realized anything before.
Look at the houses. Isn't this a fine square? There's a place we can get breakfast.
Isn't the rain fine? They never had rain like this in Italy. It's cheerful rain.
And we're here, darling. Do you realize we're here?
We went inside the cafe and sat down at a clean wooden table. We were cockeyed excited. A splendid, clean-looking woman with an apron came and asked us what we wanted.
Rolls and jam and coffee, Catherine said.
I'm sorry we haven't any rolls in wartime.
Bread, then.
I can make you some toast.
All right.
I want some eggs fried, too.
How many eggs for the gentleman?
3. Take 4, darling.
4 eggs.
The woman went away. I kissed Catherine and held her hand very tight. We looked at each other and at the cafe.
Darling, darling, isn't it lovely?
It's grand, I said.
I don't mind there not being rolls, Catherine said.
I thought about them all night, but I don't mind it. I don't mind it at all. I suppose pretty soon they will arrest us.
Never mind, darling, we'll have breakfast first.
You won't mind being arrested after breakfast?
And then there's nothing they can do to us. We're British and American citizens in good standing.
You have a passport, haven't you?
Of course. Oh, let's not talk about it. Let's be happy.
I couldn't be any happier, I said. A fat gray cat with a tail that lifted like a plume crossed the floor to our table and curved against my leg to purr each time she rubbed. I reached down and stroked her. Catherine smiled at me very happily.
Here comes the coffee, she said.
They arrested us after breakfast. We took a little walk through the village and then went down to the quay to get our bags. A soldier was standing guard over the boat.
Is this your boat?
Yes.
Where do you come from?
Up the lake.
Then I have to ask you to come with me.
How about the bags?
You can carry the bags.
I carried the bags and Catherine walked beside me, and the soldier walked along behind us to the old custom house. In the custom house, a lieutenant, very thin and military, questioned us.
What nationality are you?
American and British.
Let me see your passports.
I gave him mine and Catherine got hers out of her handbag. He examined them for a long time.
Why do you enter Switzerland this way in a boat?
I'm a sportsman, I said. Rowing is my great sport. I always row when I get a chance.
Why do you come here?
For the winter sport. We are tourists and we want to do the winter sport.
This is no place for the winter sport.
We know it. We want to go where they have the winter sport.
What have you been doing in Italy?
I have been studying architecture. My cousin has been studying art.
Why do you leave there?
We want to do the winter sport. With the war going on, you cannot study architecture.
You would please stay where you are, the lieutenant said.
He went back into the building with our passports.
You're splendid, darling, Catherine said. Keep on the same track. You want to do the winter sport.
Do you know anything about art?
Rubens, said Catherine.
Large and fat, I said.
Titian,
Catherine said.
Titian haired,
I said. How about
Mantegna?
Don't ask hard ones, Catherine said. I know him, though.
Very bitter.
Very bitter, I said.
Lots of nail holes.
You see, I'll make you a fine wife, Catherine said. I'll be able to talk art with your customers. Here he comes, I said. The thin lieutenant came down the length of the custom house, holding our passports.
I will have to send you into Locarno, he said. You can get the carriage and the soldier will go in with you.
All right, I said. What about the boat?
The boat is confiscated.
What have you in those bags? He went all through the 2 bags and held up the quarter bottle of brandy.
Would you join me in a drink? I asked.
No, thank you. He straightened up.
How much money have you?
2,500 lira. He was favorably impressed.
How much has your cousin?
Catherine had a little over 1,200 lira. The lieutenant was pleased.
His attitude toward us became less haughty. "If you are going for winter sports," he said, "Wengen is the place. My father has a very fine hotel at Wengen. It is open all the time."
"That's splendid," I said. "Could you give me the name?"
"I will write it on a card."
He handed me the card very politely.
"The soldier will take you into Locarno. He will keep your passports. I regret this, but it is necessary. I have good hopes they will give you a visa or a police permit at Locarno."
He handed the two passports to the soldier, and carrying the bags, we started into the village to order a carriage.
"Hi,"
the lieutenant called to the soldier. He said something in a German dialect to him. The soldier slung his rifle on his back and picked up the bags.
"It's a great country," I said to Catherine. "It's so practical."
"Thank you very much," I said to the lieutenant. He waved his hand.
"Service," he said.
We followed our guard into the village. We drove to Locarno in a carriage with the soldier sitting on the front seat with the driver. At Locarno, we did not have a bad time. They questioned us, but they were polite because we had passports and money. I do not think they believed a word of the story, and I thought it was silly, but it was like a law court. You did not want something reasonable, you wanted something technical, and then stuck to it without explanations. But we had passports, and we would spend the money, so they gave us provisional visas. At any time this visa might be withdrawn, we were to report to the police wherever we went. Could we go wherever we wanted? Yes. Where did we want to go?
"Where do you want to go, Cat?"
"Montreux."
"It is a very nice place," the official said. "I think you will like that place."
"Here at Locarno is a very nice place," the other official said.
"I am sure you would like it here very much at Locarno. Locarno is a very attractive place."
"We would like some place where there is winter sport."
"There's no winter sport at Montreux."
"I beg your pardon," the other official said.
"I come from Montreux. There's very certainly winter sport on the Montreux-Oberland-Bernois Railway. It would be false for you to deny that."
"I do not deny it. I simply said there is no winter sport at Montreux."
"I question that," the other official said. "I question that statement."
"I hold to that statement."
"I question that statement. I myself have luged into the streets of Montreux. I have not done it once, but several times. Luging is certainly winter sport."
The other official turned to me.
"Is luging your idea of winter sport, sir?
I tell you, you would be very comfortable here in Locarno. You would find the climate healthy. You would find the environs attractive. You would like it very much. The gentleman has expressed a wish to go to Montreux."
"What is luging?" I asked.
"You see, he has never heard of luging."
That meant a great deal to the second official. He was pleased by that.
"Luging," said the first official, "is tobogganing."
"I beg to differ." The other official shook his head. "I must differ again. The toboggan is very different from the luge. The toboggan is constructed in Canada of flat lathes. The luge is a common sled with runners. Accuracy means something."
"Couldn't we toboggan?" I asked.
"Of course you could toboggan," the first official said. "You could toboggan very well. Excellent Canadian toboggans are sold in Montreux. Oaks Brothers sells toboggans. They import their own toboggans."
The second official turned away.
"Tobogganing," he said, "requires a special beast. You could not toboggan into the streets of Montreux. Where are you stopping here?"
"We don't know," I said. "We just drove in from Brissago. The carriage is outside."
"You make no mistake in going to Montreux," the first official said. "You will find the climate delightful and beautiful. You will have no distance to go for winter sport."
"If you really want winter sport," the second official said, "you will go to the Engadine or to Muren. I must protest against your being advised to go to Montreux for the winter sport. At Les Avants, above Montreux, there is excellent winter sport of every sort."
The champion of Montreux glared at his colleague.
"Gentlemen," I said, "I am afraid we must go. My cousin is very tired. We will go tentatively to Montreux."
"I congratulate you."
The first official shook my hand.
"I believe that you will regret leaving Locarno," the second official said. "At any rate, you will report to the police at Montreux."
"There will be no unpleasantness with the police," the first official assured me. "You will find all the inhabitants extremely courteous and friendly."
"Thank you both very much," I said. "We appreciate your advice very much."
"Goodbye," Catherine said. "Thank you both very much." They bowed us to the door, the champion of Locarno a little coldly.
We went down the steps and into the carriage. "My God, darling," Catherine said. "Couldn't we have gotten away any sooner?" I gave the name of a hotel one of the officials had recommended to the driver. He picked up the reins. "You've forgotten the army," Catherine said. The soldier was standing by the carriage. I gave him a 10-lira note. "I have no Swiss money yet," I said. He thanked me, saluted, and went off. The carriage started, and we drove to the hotel. "How did you happen to pick out Montreux?" I asked Catherine. "Do you really want to go there?" "It was the first place I could think of," she said. "It's not a bad place. We can find some place up in the mountains." "Are you sleepy?" "I'm asleep right now."
"We'll get a good sleep. Poor cat, you had a long, bad night."
"I had a lovely time," Catherine said. "Especially when you sailed with the umbrella.
Can you realize we're in Switzerland?"
"No, I'm afraid I'll wake up and it won't be true."
"I am too."
"It is true, isn't it, darling? I'm not just driving down to the Stazione in Milan to see you off?"
"I hope not."
"Don't say that, it frightens me. Maybe that's where we're going."
"I'm so groggy, I don't know," I said.
"Let me see your hands."
I put them out. They were both blistered raw. "There's no hole in my side," I said.
"Don't be sacrilegious."
I felt very tired and vague in the head. The exhilaration was all gone. The carriage was going along the street.
"Poor hands," Catherine said.
"Don't touch them," I said.
"By God, I don't know where we are."
"Where are we going, driver?"
The driver stopped his horse.
"To the Hotel Metropole. Don't you want to go there?"
"Yes," I said.
"It's all right, Cat."
"It's all right, darling. Don't be upset. We'll get a good sleep and you won't feel groggy tomorrow."
"I get pretty groggy," I said. "It's like a comic opera today. Maybe I'm hungry."
"You're just tired, darling. You'll be fine."
The carriage pulled up before the hotel. Someone came out to take our bags.
"I feel all right," I said.
We were down on the pavement, going into the hotel.
"I know you'll be all right. You're just tired. You've been up a long time.
Anyhow, we're here."
"Yes, we're really here."
We followed the boy with the bags into the hotel.
Book 5, Chapter 38. That fall the snow came very late. We lived in a brown wooden house in the pine trees on the side of the mountain, and at night there was frost so that there was thin ice over the water in the two pitchers on the dresser in the morning. Mrs. Göttingen came into the room early in the morning to shut the windows and started a fire in the tall porcelain stove. The pine wood crackled and sparked, and then the fire roared in the stove, and the second time Mrs. Göttingen came into the room, she brought big chunks of wood for the fire and a pitcher of hot water. When the room was warm, she brought in breakfast. Sitting up in bed, eating breakfast, we could see the lake and the mountains across the lake on the French side. There was snow on the tops of the mountains, and the lake was a gray steel blue. Outside in front of the chalet, a road went up the mountain. The wheel ruts and ridges were iron hard with the frost, and the road climbed steadily through the forest and up and around the mountain to where there were meadows, and barns and cabins in the meadows at the edge of the woods looking across the valley. The valley was deep, and there was a stream at the bottom that flowed down into the lake, and when the wind blew across the valley, you could hear the stream in the rocks. Sometimes we went off the road and on a path through the pine forest. The floor of the forest was soft to walk on. The frost did not harden it as it did the road. But we did not mind the hardness of the road because we had nails in the soles and heels of our boots, and the heel nails bit on the frozen ruts, and with nailed boots it was good walking on the road and invigorating. But it was lovely walking in the woods. In front of the house where we lived, the mountain went down steeply to the little plain along the lake, and we sat on the porch of the house in the sun and saw the winding of the road down the mountainside and the terraced vineyards on the side of the lower mountain, the vines all dead now for the winter and the fields divided by stone walls, and below the vineyards the houses of the town on the narrow plain along the lake shore. There was an island with two trees on the lake, and the trees looked like the double sails of a fishing boat. The mountains were sharp and steep on the other side of the lake, and down at the end of the lake there was the plain of the Rhone Valley, flat between the two ranges of mountains. And up the valley where the mountains cut it off was the Dent du Midi. It was a high, snowy mountain, and it dominated the valley, but it was so far away that it did not make a shadow. When the sun was bright, we ate lunch on the porch, but the rest of the time we ate upstairs in a small room with plain wooden walls and a big stove in the corner. We bought books and magazines in the town and a copy of Hoyle and learned many two-handed card games. The small room with the stove was our living room. There were two comfortable chairs and a table for books and magazines, and we played cards on the dining table when it was cleared away. Mr. and Mrs. Göttingen lived downstairs, and we would hear them talking sometimes in the evening, and they were very happy together, too. He had been a head waiter, and she had worked as a maid in the same hotel, and they had saved their money to buy this place. They had a son who was studying to be a head waiter. He was at a hotel in Zurich. Downstairs there was a parlor where they sold wine and beer, and sometimes in the evening we would hear carts stop outside on the road, and men come up the steps to go into the parlor to drink wine. There was a box of wood in the hall outside the living room, and I kept up the fire from it. But we did not stay up very late. We went to bed in the dark in the big bedroom, and when I was undressed I opened the windows and saw the night and the cold stars and the pine trees below the window, and then got into bed as fast as I could. It was lovely in bed, with the air so cold and clear and the night outside the window. We slept well, and if I woke in the night I knew it was from only one cause, and I would shift the feather bed over very softly, so that Catherine would not be wakened, and then go back to sleep again, warm with the new lightness of thin covers. The war seemed as far away as the football games of someone else's college, but I knew from the papers that they were still fighting in the mountains, because the snow would not come. Sometimes we walked down the mountain into Montreux. There was a path went down the mountain, but it was steep, and so usually we took the road and walked down the wide, hard road between the fields, and then below between the stone walls of the vineyards, and on down between the houses of the villages along the way. There were three villages, Cherney, Fontanivant, and the other I forget. Then along the road we passed an old square-built stone chateau on a ledge on the side of the mountainside, with the terraced fields of vines. Each vine tied to a stick to hold it up, the vines dry and brown and the earth ready for the snow, and the lake down below flat and gray as steel. The road went down a long grade below the chateau, and then turned to the right and went down very steeply, and paved with cobbles, into Montreux. We did not know anyone in Montreux. We walked along beside the lake and saw the swans and the many gulls and terns that flew up when you came close and screamed while they looked down at the water. Out on the lake there were flocks of grebes, small and dark, and leaving trails in the water when they swam. In the town we walked along the main street and looked in the windows of the shops. There were many big hotels that were closed, but most of the shops were open, and people were very glad to see us. There was a fine coiffure's place where Catherine went to have her hair done. The woman who ran it was very cheerful, and the only person we knew in Montreux. While Catherine was there, I went up to a beer place and drank dark Munich beer and read the papers. I read the Corriere della Sera and the English and American papers from Paris. All the advertisements were blacked out, supposedly to prevent communication in that way with the enemy. The papers were bad reading. Everything was going very badly everywhere. I sat in the back corner with a heavy mug of dark beer and an opened glazed paper package of pretzels and ate the pretzels for the salty flavor and the good way they made the beer taste, and read about disaster. I thought Catherine would come by, but she did not come, so I hung the papers back on the rack, paid for my beer, and went up the street to look for her. The day was cold and dark and wintry, and the stone of the houses looked cold. Catherine was still in the hairdresser's shop. The woman was waving her hair. I sat in the little booth and watched. It was exciting to watch, and Catherine smiled and talked to me, and my voice was a little thick from being excited. The tongs made a pleasant clicking sound, and I could see Catherine in three mirrors, and it was pleasant and warm in the booth. Then the woman put up Catherine's hair, and Catherine looked in the mirror and changed it a little, taking out and putting in pins, then stood up. I'm sorry to have taken such a long time.
Monsieur was very interested. Were you not, monsieur? The woman smiled.
Yes, I said. We went out and up the street. It was cold and wintry, and the wind was blowing.
Oh, darling, I love you so, I said.
Don't we have a fine time? Catherine said. Look, let's go someplace and have a beer instead of tea. It's very good for young Catherine. Keeps her small.
Young Catherine, I said, that loafer.
She's been very good, Catherine said. She makes very little trouble.
The doctor says beer will be good for me and keep her small. If you keep her small enough and she's a boy, maybe she will be a jockey.
I suppose if we really have this child, we ought to get married, Catherine said. We were in the beer place at the corner table. It was getting dark outside. It was still early, but the day was dark, and the dusk was coming early.
Let's get married now, I said.
No, Catherine said. It's too embarrassing now. I show too plainly. I won't go before anyone and be married in this state.
I wish we'd gotten married.
I suppose it would have been better. But when could we, darling?
I don't know.
I know one thing. I'm not going to be married in this splendid matronly state.
You're not matronly.
Oh, yes, I am, darling. The hairdresser asked me if this was our first child. I lied and said no, we had two boys and two girls.
When will we be married?
Any time after I'm thin again. We want to have a splendid wedding, with everyone thinking what a handsome young couple.
And you're not worried?
Darling, why should I be worried? The only time I ever felt badly was when I felt like a whore in Milan, and that only lasted 7 minutes, and besides it was the room furnishings. Don't I make you a good wife?
You're a lovely wife.
Then don't be too technical, darling. I'll marry you as soon as I'm thin again.
All right.
Do you think I ought to drink another beer?
The doctor said I was rather narrow in the hips, and it's all for the best if we keep young Catherine small. What else did he say? I was worried.
Nothing. I have a wonderful blood pressure, darling. He admired my blood pressure greatly.
What did he say about you being too narrow in the hips?
Nothing, nothing at all. He said I shouldn't ski.
Quite right.
He said it was too late to start if I had never done it before. He said I could ski if I wouldn't fall down.
He's just a big-hearted joker.
Really, he was very nice. We'll have him when the baby comes.
Did you ask him if you ought to get married?
No. I told him we'd been married 4 years. You see, darling, if I marry you, I'll be an American, and any time we're married under American law, the child is legitimate.
Where did you find that out?
In the New York World Almanac in the library.
You're a grand girl.
I'll be very glad to be an American, and we'll go to America, won't we, darling? I want to see Niagara Falls.
You're a fine girl.
There's something else I want to see, but I can't remember it.
The stockyards?
No, I can't remember it.
The Woolworth Building?
No.
The Grand Canyon?
No, but I'd like to see that.
What was it?
The Golden Gate. That's what I want to see. Where is the Golden Gate?
San Francisco.
Then let's go there. I want to see San Francisco anyway.
All right, we'll go there.
Now let's go up the mountain, should we? Can we get the MOB?
There's a train a little after 5.
Let's get that.
All right. I'll drink one more beer first. When we went out to go up the street and climb the stairs to the station, it was very cold. A cold wind was coming down the Rhone Valley. There were lights in the shop windows, and we climbed the steep stone stairway to the upper street, and then up another stairs to the station. The electric train was there waiting, all the lights on. There was a dial that showed when it left. The clock hands pointed to 5:10. I looked at the station clock. It was 5 minutes after. As we got on board, I saw the motorman and conductor coming out of the station wine shop. We sat down and opened the window. The train was electrically heated and stuffy, but fresh, cold air came in through the window.
"Are you tired, Cat?" I asked.
"No, I feel splendid. It isn't a long ride."
"I like the ride," she said. "Don't worry about me, darling. I feel fine."
Snow did not come until 3 days before Christmas. We woke one morning and it was snowing. We stayed in bed with the fire roaring in the stove and watched the snow fall. Mrs. Goodigan took away the breakfast trays and put more wood in the stove. It was a big snowstorm. She said it had started about midnight.
I went to the window and looked out but could not see across the road. It was blowing and snowing wildly. I went back to bed and we lay and talked.
"I wish I could ski," Catherine said. "It's rotten not to be able to ski."
"We'll get a bobsled and come down the road. That's no worse for you than riding in a car."
"Won't it be rough?"
"We can see."
"I hope it won't be too rough."
"After a while, we'll take a walk in the snow."
"Before lunch," Catherine said, "so we'll have a good appetite."
"I'm always hungry."
"So am I."
We went out in the snow, but it was drifted so that we could not walk far. I went ahead and made a trail down to the station, but when we reached there, we had gone far enough. The snow was blowing so we could hardly see, and we went into the little inn by the station and swept each other off with a broom and sat on a bench and had vermouths.
"It is a big storm," the barmaid said.
"Yes."
"The snow is very late this year."
"Yes."
"Could I eat a chocolate bar?" Catherine asked. "Or is it too close to lunch? I'm always hungry."
"Go on and eat one," I said.
"I'll take one with filberts," Catherine said.
"They are very good," the girl said.
"I like them the best."
"I'll have another vermouth," I said. When we came out to start back up the road, our track was filled in by the snow. There were only faint indentations where the holes had been. The snow blew in our faces so we could hardly see. We brushed off and went in to have lunch. Mr. Gudingen served the lunch.
"Tomorrow there will be skiing," he said.
"Do you ski, Mr. Henry?"
"No, but I want to learn."
"You will learn very easily. My boy will be here for Christmas and he will teach you."
"That's fine. When does he come?"
"Tomorrow night."
When we were sitting by the stove in the little room after lunch, looking out the window at the snow coming down, Catherine said,
"Wouldn't you like to go on a trip somewhere by yourself, darling, and be with men and ski?"
"No, why should I?"
"I should think sometimes you would want to see other people besides me."
"Do you want to see other people?"
"No."
"Neither do I."
"I know, but you're different. I'm having a child, and that makes me contented not to do anything. I know I'm awfully stupid now, I talk too much, and I think you ought to get away so you won't be tired of me."
"Do you want me to go away?"
"No, I want you to stay."
"That's what I'm going to do."
"Come over here," she said. "I want to feel the bump on your head. It's a big bump."
She ran her finger over it.
"Darling, would you like to grow a beard?"
"Would you like me to?"
"It might be fun. I'd like to see you with a beard."
"All right, I'll grow one. I'll start now this minute. It's a good idea. It will give me something to do."
"Are you worried because you haven't anything to do?"
"No, I like it. I have a fine life, don't you?"
"I have a lovely life. But I was afraid because I'm big now that maybe I was a bore to you."
"Oh, Cat, you don't know how crazy I am about you."
"This way?"
"Just the way you are. I have a fine time. Don't we have a good life?"
"I do, but I thought maybe you were restless."
"No. Sometimes I wonder about the front and about people I know, but I don't worry. I don't think about anything much."
"Who do you wonder about?"
"About Rinaldi and the priest and lots of people I know. But I don't think about them much. I don't want to think about the war. I'm through with it."
"What are you thinking about now?"
"Nothing."
"Yes, you were. Tell me."
"I was wondering whether Rinaldi had the syphilis."
"Was that all?"
"Yes."
"Has he the syphilis?"
"I don't know."
"I'm glad you haven't. Did you ever have anything like that?"
"I had gonorrhea."
"I don't want to hear about it. Was it very painful, darling?"
"Very."
"I wish I'd had it."
"No, you don't."
"I do. I wish I'd had it to be like you. I wish I'd stayed with all your girls so I could make fun of them to you."
"That's a pretty picture."
"It's not a pretty picture, you having gonorrhea."
"I know it."
"Look at it snow now."
"I'd rather look at you."
"Darling, why don't you let your hair grow?"
"How grow?"
"Just grow a little longer."
"It's long enough now."
"No, let it grow a little longer and I could cut mine and we'd be just alike, only one of us blonde and one of us dark."
"I wouldn't let you cut yours."
"It would be fun. I'm tired of it. It's an awful nuisance in the bed at night."
"I like it."
"Wouldn't you like it short?"
"I might. I like it the way it is."
It might be nice, short. Then we'd both be alike.
Oh, darling, I want you so much. I want to be you, too.
You are. We're the same one.
I know it.
At night we are.
The nights are grand. I want us to be all mixed up. I don't want you to go away. I just said that. You go if you want to, but hurry right back.
Why, darling, I don't live at all when I'm not with you.
I won't ever go away, I said. I'm no good when you're not here. I haven't any life at all anymore.
I want you to have a life. I want you to have a fine life. But we'll have it together, won't we?
And now do you want me to stop growing my beard or let it go on?
Go on, grow it. It will be exciting.
Maybe it will be done for New Year's.
Now do you want to play chess?
I'd rather play with you.
No, let's play chess.
And afterward we'll play.
Yes.
All right.
I got out the chessboard and arranged the pieces. It was still snowing hard outside. One time in the night I woke up and knew that Catherine was awake too. The moon was shining in the window and made shadows on the bed from the bars on the window panes.
Are you awake, sweetheart?
Yes.
Can't you sleep? I just woke up thinking about how I was nearly crazy when I first met you. Do you remember?
You were just a little crazy.
I'm never that way anymore. I'm grand now.
You say grand so sweetly. Say grand.
Grand.
Oh, you're sweet. And I'm not crazy now. I'm just very, very, very happy.
Go on to sleep, I said.
All right. Let's go to sleep at exactly the same moment.
All right.
But we did not. I was awake for quite a long time thinking about things and watching Catherine sleeping, the moonlight on her face. Then I went to sleep, too.
Chapter 39. By the middle of January, I had a beard, and the winter had settled into bright, cold days and hard, cold nights. We could walk on the roads again. The snow was packed hard and smooth by the hay sleds and wood sledges and the logs that were hauled down the mountain. The snow lay over all the country, down almost to Montreux. The mountains on the other side of the lake were all white, and the plain of the Rhone Valley was covered. We took long walks on the other side of the mountain to the Bain de l'Allier. Catherine wore hobnailed boots and a cape and carried a stick with a sharp steel point. She did not look big with the cape, and we would not walk too fast, but stopped and sat on logs by the roadside to rest when she was tired. There was an inn in the trees at the Bain de l'Allier, where the woodcutters stopped to drink, and we sat inside warmed by the stove and drank hot red wine with spices and lemon in it. They called it Glühwein, and it was a good thing to warm you and to celebrate with. The inn was dark and smoky inside, and afterward, when you went out, the cold air came sharply into your lungs and numbed the edge of your nose as you inhaled. We looked back at the inn with light coming from the windows, and the woodcutters' horses stamping and jerking their heads outside to keep warm. There was frost on the hairs of their muzzles, and their breathing made plumes of frost in the air. Going up the road toward home, the road was smooth and slippery for a while, and the ice orange from the horses until the wood-hauling track turned off. Then the road was clean-packed snow and led through the woods, and twice coming home in the evening we saw foxes. It was a fine country, and every time that we went out it was fun.
"You have a splendid beard now," Catherine said.
"It looks just like the woodcutters. Did you see the man with the tiny gold earrings?"
"He's a chamois hunter," I said. "They wear them because they say it makes them hear better."
"Really, I don't believe it. I think they wear them to show they are chamois hunters. Are there chamois near here?"
"Yes, beyond the Dent de Jamont."
It was fun seeing the fox.
When he sleeps, he wraps that tail around him to keep warm.
It must be a lovely feeling.
I've always wanted to have a tail like that. Wouldn't it be fun if we had brushes like a fox?
It might be very difficult dressing.
We'd have clothes made, or live in a country where it wouldn't make any difference.
We live in a country where nothing makes any difference. Isn't it grand how we never see anyone? You don't want to see people, do you, darling?
No.
Should we sit here just a minute? I'm a little bit tired.
We sat close together on the logs. Ahead, the road went down through the forest.
She won't come between us, will she, the little brat?
No, we won't let her.
How are we for money?
We have plenty. They honored the last sight draft.
Won't your family try and get hold of you now they know you're in Switzerland?
Probably. I'll write them something.
Haven't you written them?
No, only the sight draft. Thank God I'm not your family. I'll send them a cable.
Don't you care anything about them?
I did, but we quarreled so much it wore itself out.
I think I'd like them. I'd probably like them very much.
Let's not talk about them or I'll start to worry about them. After a while, I said, let's go on if you're rested.
I'm rested.
We went on down the road. It was dark now, and the snow squeaked under our boots. The night was dry and cold and very clear.
I love your beard, Catherine said. It's a great success. It looks so stiff and fierce, and it's very soft and a great pleasure.
Do you like it better than without?
I think so.
You know, darling, I'm not going to cut my hair now until after young Catherine's born. I look too big and matronly now. But after she's born, and I'm thin again, I'm going to cut it, and then I'll be a fine, new, and different girl for you. We'll go together and get it cut, or I'll go alone and come and surprise you. I did not say anything.
You won't say I can't, will you?
No. I think it would be exciting.
Oh, you're so sweet.
And maybe I'd look lovely, darling, and be so thin and exciting to you, and you'd fall in love with me all over again. Hell, I said. I love you enough now. What do you want to do, ruin me?
Yes, I want to ruin you.
Good, I said. That's what I want, too. Chapter 40. We had a fine life. We lived through the months of January and February, and the winter was very fine, and we were very happy. There had been short thaws when the winter blew warm and the snow softened and the air felt like spring, but always the clear, hard cold had come again and the winter had returned. In March came the first break in the winter. In the night it started raining. It rained on all morning and turned the snow to slush and made the mountainside dismal. There were clouds over the lake and over the valley. It was raining high up in the mountain. Catherine wore heavy overshoes and I wore Mr. Göttingen's rubber boots, and we walked to the station under an umbrella, through the slush and the running water that was washing the ice of the roads bare, to stop at the pub before lunch for a vermouth. Outside we could hear the rain.
Do you think we ought to move into town?
What do you think? Catherine asked.
If the winter is over and the rain keeps up, it won't be fun up here.
How long is it before young Catherine?
About a month. Perhaps a little more.
We might go down and stay in Montreux.
Why don't we go to Lausanne?
That's where the hospital is.
All right, but I thought maybe that was too big a town.
We can be as much alone in a bigger town, and Lausanne might be nice.
When should we go?
I don't care. Whenever you want, darling. I don't want to leave here if you don't want.
Let's see how the weather turns out. It rained for 3 days. The snow was all gone now on the mountainside below the station. The road was a torrent of muddy snow water. It was too wet and slushy to go out. On the morning of the third day of rain, we decided to go down into town.
"That is all right, Mr. Henry," Göttingen said. "You do not have to give me any notice. I did not think you would want to stay now the bad weather is come."
"We have to be near the hospital anyway on account of Madame," I said.
"I understand," he said. "Will you come back sometime and stay, with a little one?"
"Yes, if you would have room."
"In the spring, when it is nice, you could come and enjoy it. We could put the little one and the nurse in the big room that is closed now, and you and Madame could have your same room looking out over the lake."
"I'll write about coming," I said. We packed and left on the train that went down after lunch. Mr. and Mrs. Göttingen came down to the station with us, and he hauled our baggage down on a sled through the slush. They stood beside the station in the rain, waving goodbye.
"They're very sweet," Catherine said.
They were fine to us.
We took the train to Lausanne from Montreux. Looking out the window toward where we had lived, you could not see the mountains for the clouds. The train stopped in Vevey, then went on,
passing the lake on one side and on the other the wet brown fields and the bare woods and the wet houses. We came into Lausanne and went into a medium-sized hotel to stay. It was still raining as we drove through the streets and into the carriage entrance of the hotel. The concierge with brass keys on his lapels, the elevator, the carpets on the floors, and the white wash bowls with shining fixtures, the brass bed and the big comfortable bedroom all seemed very great luxury after the Göttingens. The windows of the room looked out on a wet garden with a wall topped by an iron fence. Across the street, which sloped steeply, was another hotel with a similar wall and garden. I looked out at the rain falling in the fountain of the garden. Catherine turned on all the lights and commenced unpacking. I ordered a whiskey and soda and lay on the bed and read the papers I had bought at the station. It was March 1918, and the German offensive had started in France. I drank the whiskey and soda and read while Catherine unpacked and moved around the room. "You know what I have to get, darling," she said.
"What?"
"Baby clothes. There aren't many people reach my time without baby things."
"You can buy them."
"I know, that's what I'll do tomorrow. I'll find out what is necessary."
"You ought to know, you were a nurse."
"But so few of the soldiers had babies in the hospitals."
"I did."
She hit me with a pillow and spilled the whiskey and the soda. "I'll order you another," she said. "I'm sorry I spilled it."
"There wasn't much left. Come on over to the bed."
"No, I have to try and make this room look like something."
"Like what?"
"Like our home.
Hang out the Allied flags."
"Oh, shut up."
"Say it again."
"Shut up."
"You say it so cautiously," I said, "as though you didn't want to offend anyone."
"I don't."
"Then come over to the bed."
"All right."
She came and sat on the bed.
"I know I'm no fun for you, darling. I'm like a big flour barrel."
"No, you're not. You're beautiful and you're sweet."
"I'm just something very ungainly that you've married."
"No, you're not. You're more beautiful all the time."
"But I will be thin again, darling."
"You're thin now."
"You've been drinking."
"Just whiskey and soda."
"There's another one coming," she said.
"And should we order dinner up here?"
"That would be good."
"Then we won't go out, will we? We'll just stay in tonight."
"And play," I said.
"I'll drink some wine," Catherine said. "It won't hurt me.
Maybe we can get some of our old white Capri."
"I know we can," I said. "They'll have Italian wines at a hotel this size."
The waiter knocked at the door. He brought the whiskey in a glass with ice, and beside the glass, on a small tray, a bottle of soda.
"Thank you," I said. "Put it down there."
"Will you please have dinner for two brought up here, and two bottles of dry white Capri and ice?"
"Do you wish to commence your dinner with soup?"
"Do you want soup, Cat?"
"Please.
Bring soup for one."
"Thank you, sir."
He went out and shut the door.
I went back to the papers and the war in the papers and poured the soda slowly over the ice into the whiskey. I would have to tell them not to put the ice in the whiskey. Let them bring the ice separately. That way you could tell how much whiskey there was and it would not suddenly be too thin from the soda. I would get a bottle of whiskey and have them bring ice and soda. That was the sensible way. Good whiskey was very pleasant. It was one of the pleasant parts of life.
"What are you thinking, darling?"
"About whiskey."
"What about whiskey?"
"About how nice it is."
Catherine made a face.
"All right," she said.
We stayed at that hotel 3 weeks. It was not bad. The dining room was usually empty, and very often we ate in our room at night. We walked in the town and took the cogwheel railway down to Ouchy and walked beside the lake. The weather became quite warm, and it was like spring. We wished we were back in the mountains, but the spring weather lasted only a few days, and then the cold rawness of the breaking up of winter came again. Catherine bought the things she needed for the baby up in the town. I went to the gymnasium in the arcade to box for exercise. I usually went up there in the morning while Catherine stayed late in bed. On the days of false spring, it was very nice, after boxing and taking a shower, to walk along the streets smelling the spring in the air, and stop at a cafe to sit and watch the people and read the paper and drink a vermouth, then go down to the hotel and have lunch with Catherine. The professor at the boxing gymnasium wore mustaches and was very precise and jerky and went all to pieces if you started after him. But it was pleasant in the gym. There was good air and light,
and I worked quite hard, skipping rope, shadow boxing, doing abdominal exercises, lying on the floor in a patch of sunlight that came through the open window, and occasionally scaring the professor when we boxed. I could not shadow box in front of the long, narrow mirror at first because it looked so strange to see a man with a beard boxing. But finally I just thought it was funny. I wanted to take off the beard as soon as I started boxing, but Catherine did not want me to. Sometimes Catherine and I went for rides out in the country in a carriage. It was nice to ride when the days were pleasant, and we found two good places where we could ride out to eat. Catherine could not walk very far now, and I loved to ride out along the country roads with her. When there was a good day, we had a splendid time, and we never had a bad time. We knew the baby was very close now, and it gave us both a feeling as though something were hurrying us, and we could not lose any time together. Chapter 41. One morning I awoke about 3 o'clock, hearing Catherine stirring in the bed. "Are you all right, Cat?" "I've been having some pains, darling."
"Regularly?"
"No, not very."
"If you have them at all regularly, we'll go to the hospital."
I was very sleepy and went back to sleep. A little while later I woke again.
"Maybe you better call up the doctor," Catherine said. "I think maybe this is it."
I went to the phone and called the doctor.
"How often are the pains coming?"
he asked.
"How often are they coming, Cat?"
"I should think every quarter of an hour."
"You should go to the hospital, then,"
the doctor said.
"I will dress and go there right away myself."
I hung up and called the garage near the station to send up a taxi. No one answered the phone for a long time. Then I finally got a man who promised to send up a taxi at once. Catherine was dressing. Her bag was all packed with the things she would need at the hospital and the baby things. Outside in the hall, I rang for the elevator. There was no answer. I went downstairs. There was no one downstairs except the night watchman. I brought the elevator up myself, put Catherine's bag in it, she stepped in, and we went down. The night watchman opened the door for us, and we sat outside on the stone slabs beside the stairs down to the driveway and waited for the taxi. The night was clear and the stars were out. Catherine was very excited.
"I'm so glad it started," she said. "Now in a little while it will all be over."
"You're a good, brave girl."
"I'm not afraid. I wish the taxi would come, though."
We heard it coming up the street and saw its headlights. It turned into the driveway, and I helped Catherine in, and the driver put the bag up in front. "Drive to the hospital," I said. We went out of the driveway and started up the hill. At the hospital, we went in, and I carried the bag. There was a woman at the desk who wrote down Catherine's name, age, address, relatives, and religion in a book. She said she had no religion, and the woman drew a line in the space after that word. She gave her name as Catherine Henry.
"I will take you up to your room," she said.
We went up in an elevator. The woman stopped it and we stepped out and followed her down the hall. Catherine held tight to my arm.
"This is the room," the woman said. "Will you please undress and get into bed? Here's a nightgown for you to wear."
"I have a nightgown," Catherine said.
"It is better for you to wear this nightgown," the woman said.
I went outside and sat on a chair in the hallway.
"You can come in now,"
the woman said from the doorway. Catherine was lying in the narrow bed wearing a plain, square-cut gown that looked as though it were made out of rough sheeting. She smiled at me.
"I'm having fine pains now," she said.
The woman was holding her wrist and timing the pains with a watch.
"That was a big one,"
Catherine said. I saw it on her face. "Where's the doctor?" I asked the woman.
"He's lying down sleeping. He will be here when he is needed."
"I must do something for Madame now," the nurse said. "Would you please step out again?"
I went out into the hall. It was a bare hall with two windows and closed doors all down the corridor. It smelled of hospital. I sat on the chair and looked at the floor and prayed for Catherine.
"You can come in,"
the nurse said, and I went in.
"Hello, darling," Catherine said.
"How is it?"
"They're coming quite often now."
Her face drew up. Then she smiled.
"That was a real one.
Do you want to put your hand on my back again, nurse?"
"If it helps you," the nurse said.
"You go away, darling," Catherine said. "Go out and get something to eat. I may do this for a long time," the nurse says.
"The first labor is usually protracted," the nurse said.
"Please go out and get something to eat,"
Catherine said. I'm fine, really.
I'll stay a while, I said. The pains came quite regularly, then slackened off. Catherine was very excited.